This is Srinivas Rao, the host of the Vistage podcast series. Today, I'm speaking with Tom Mugiola, the president of MediaNet, a presentation skills company in New York City. Tom's worked as a presentation skills consultant for major corporations since 1985 with organizations like IBM, Microsoft, and Dell. Tom, thanks so much for taking the time to join us and share some of your insights with our Vistage listeners today.
I appreciate being here. Thank you for having me.
So, Tom, I'm going to ask you the very first question. I think this is a very common question that when it comes to presentation and speaking, how can people eliminate that feeling of uncomfortableness or nervousness?
Yeah, typically a person is nervous because they're focused on themselves. That's the usual case of nervousness. What will they think of me? What if I don't answer this question? What if I'm unprepared? If the words I or me are going through your head, then the focus is on yourself. You have to be nervous because the presentation's about you. You are concerned about yourself. If the focus is external, outside of yourself, what can I do for them? How can I enlighten them? I can't wait to share this with them. That's the first step toward no nervousness. So usually when people have something to do that's outside of themselves, the availability of nervousness by nature will drop because there's activity. So that's a theoretical way of beginning the process. And bottom line, most people have four phobias by the age of 11, and it doesn't mean they can't exist with these, but they learn to manage them. Maybe somebody's afraid of bumblebees, so they kind of avoid situations with bumblebees, but it doesn't mean that they eliminate this. People won't eliminate their nervousness, but they can manage it. And one way is to focus externally, which is where nonverbal communication skills or body language actually plays a role.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I think it's interesting that you brought up the external focus. And one other thing I would tie to that, I think, is that preparation really plays a role in your ability to focus externally. Often I've found that where you get really nervous is when you haven't really prepared your content, because you'd mentioned what is it that you're going to bring to the people that you're presenting to. And that really is the core of external focus. And I'd love to hear your thoughts on that.
Well, you brought up the key element. Preparation works two ways. One is information, the content itself. And the other is preparation for situations. Like I'll ask people, are you prepared for questions? And the response I'll hear is, oh, yeah, they can ask me anything. I say, no, what are you going to ask them? What three questions have you brought with you to spark the conversation, to create foreshadowing effects where you can get audience answers and use them later in your presentation, where you can dictate the terms of the question so audiences begin to see you as a lead and begin to ask you questions along your lines of thinking. And these are the preparation moments some people wait for, or wing, if you will, thinking, well, if I just prepare my slide content, I should be okay. Well, that's just a pretty small piece of this story. So that's why preparedness actually leads to a key word, because you hit the nail on the head. It's the concept of predictability. And the more predictable you are, the more people can follow along. Meaning you and I are now having a conversation. So in a conversation, 50% of it is what I'm saying. 50% of it is how I'm saying it, because we're on the telephone. And if you were seeing me, it would be what I look like as well. That's because you can't predict what might be said next. Although through the questions you're asking, the level of predictability is beginning to rise, meaning the audience who's listening and you know that I'm on a topic that has to do with predictability, because that's what we're talking about. More predictability means more nonverbal skills are noticeable as opposed to the verbal ones, which is why in presentations everything should be very predictable, so audiences are kind of nodding their heads going, yeah, you make so much sense. That's exactly the way I think. That's the beauty of preparedness.
Well, and I think that makes a really just a perfect transition to the next question, which is, what's more important, the content or the delivery? Because what you just spoke about there was delivery in a lot of ways.
Yeah, if you look at the statistics, if 50-50 is what goes on in a conversation where there's a high level of, the term in the literature they like to use is camouflage, can't know what's coming next kind of thing. When the camouflage is lower and the predictability is higher, about 55% of what a person's saying would be what they look like when they say it, and about 38% more would be how they actually deliver it. 7% would be what they say. Some might interpret this as being, well, that means the content's not important. Now, we're dealing with a situation of predictability where nonverbal cues dominate. Now, in conversation, this wouldn't be true, but in delivery, it would be with as a prepared presentation, prepared speech. The fact that the content looks small just means you have to have the right content. not the amount of content, but the quality of it. And that's what suffers in presentations today, is many people have too much content to sift through, and this leads to an audience not sure what to do. They're not able to predict, what should I be reading? Should I be listening? Where? What are you going to do next, kind of thing? And the distraction level rises. So the content's extremely important. It's the type of content that we're talking about.
Mm-hmm. Well, and you know, the other thing I think that for me has always been important is that people sometimes tend to use their content or their slides as a crutch. And I always say that it should complement your message. It shouldn't be your message. And sometimes I think that can really, really take away from somebody's presentation.
I totally agree with the fact that it can detract from the presentation. It's inside the message. It kind of works like this. Consider the element of respect. You walk in, someone says, you know, he sounds like an expert. I mean, he really sounds like he knows what he's talking about. I'm going to listen to this guy. I have respect for this guy. Okay, so when that issue becomes an issue for the speaker, now the audience says, well, wait a minute. Look, you brought a lot of stuff for me to look at on your screen, so I respect that too. Let me start reading that. And all of a sudden, you're speaking. So now they go, well, now you're confusing me, because I respect you and I respect what you brought for me to see. Some presenters say, well, I really don't want them to read it. Then I say, well, why did you bring it? Which is the case. And many people do what you just suggested, was use it as a crutch. You begin to say, hey, I wrote this stuff. I can't paraphrase it better than I wrote it. Hence, I should repeat it so I can be accurate. And then before you know it, you're reading every word, every line, every bullet, and someone in the audience is out there going, he can read. This guy's good. So I believe what you're saying is, I'm in agreement with what you're saying, is that the audience is looking for someone who can add value, not just repeat content.
Yeah. In fact, one of the things I've always thought was that the slides by themselves should be kind of useless without the presenter.
Absolutely. That's exact. Slide should tease, never please. Someone should look at your content and see something of support, because there is a checkpoint. People need to check against information to see, does something add up, especially if it's data-driven information, or if it doesn't have to be a lot of text, but it's the text enough to a key bullet point. I might go, I should listen to this guy because I'm not sure what that means.
Mm-hmm.
And that's in a way of a slide being viewed rather than slides being built to be read.
Absolutely. So we've talked a lot about content and delivery. I mean, obviously, there are people who are going to be great at certain things and lousy at certain things. So how can people figure out what areas to target in terms of improving their skills in the area of presentation?
Yeah, I was lucky enough to be part of the faculty, join part of the faculty at NYU in 2005. And when I got there, my colleague, Dr. Leila Jahangiri, who's the chair of the Department of Prosthodontics, asked me to become part of the department. I was like, hang on, that's prosthodontics, that's dentistry. You know, what are you doing here? She goes, no, I want you to work with the faculty. We want to work on teaching effectiveness. So we decided to do a massive study on what it is people liked and didn't like about presenters, teachers, public speakers. And this had mirrored some of the studies I was lucky enough to do in the middle of the 90s, even back into the late 80s. And this was now something we can produce, publish as research. And we built these assessment tools from this study, published them in 2010. And basically, there are 21 skills people look for in speakers. 11 are in their personality, 5 in their content, 5 in the delivery. And there are 80 little metrics one can use to evaluate themselves or evaluate another person, not like an audience would do, but how an individual might, because it takes about 5 minutes to fill one of these forms out. But let's say you would look at yourself as a speaker, and I says, here, here's the form. Why don't you evaluate yourself? And let's say one of the things says smiles. And you would say, well, do I smile when I speak at all? And if you check that box, that's an opportunity. If you said, no, looks too serious, that would be a challenge. And when you add up all these challenges and opportunities and you map them to the research, you would get a metric, a measurement for your skill. And you would know what to improve on, because every item is actionable. And I've been using these globally, and over 450 universities, organizations are using these tools to assess people in presentation situations to improve, because you come back from a seminar and someone says, you were a 7, can you be an 8? You said, love to be an 8, what do I do? Ah, you know what to do. and you don't.
Mm-hmm.
So the assessment tools have changed everything for the way people can get coached and improve their skills because they're actionable items.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, really, really fantastic points. Now, let's say they don't have access to assessment tools. Are there things they can do on sort of a day-to-day basis or in terms of their day-to-day activities that could help them?
The easiest way a person can help themselves is to self-assess in just their own way, to say, take stock of themselves. What do I think I'm good at? What do I think I'm not? For example, is someone a good storyteller? Mm-hmm. Do they feel comfortable telling stories? They should consider building stories in. Are they good at interaction? Can they add more questions if the audience is of a size, small enough that interaction with a lot of people is possible? Are they great with statistical information? Maybe they should be more accurate in their language choices, their speech. Overall, the best way to improve a skill is to have somebody give some feedback to you that is of a constructive nature that can help you, which is what we went through in school, where you'd hand someone a report and you get a B, and the teacher would say, well, that's because you didn't outline this section over here. Like, at least there was some work to be done. A math test was easy because you knew what you got wrong, but at least you could go back and study. So I think people need feedback before they can just arbitrarily do something every day and say, now I'm improving. And it could be anyone who's watching them present. You ask a colleague, say, listen, I feel uncomfortable. Tell me where you think I went off. Oh, 15 minutes in, I think you were lost.
So, Tom, one final question for you. Can you tell us how you handle tough questions from an audience?
Yeah, the easiest way to handle a tough question is to explore more information or get something rather than to jump at it. Some people say, well, if you get a tough question, you could just say, well, I'm sorry, I don't know. Yes, you could do that. You could ask somebody in the audience. But there are three E words that people can use to sort of save themselves when the questions are tough. And they all begin with the letter E. You could say, if somebody asks you a question, you're not sure of the answer, you could say, can you elaborate on that? Or you could say, can you give me an example? That's another E word. Or you could say, can you explain that? And those E words do the following. They toss it back to the person who asked the question for clarity. And the person who was seemingly unclear because you had to say, can you explain that, is a little bit under public scrutiny in their own way. It's the same thing as fear of presenting. It's fear of public scrutiny. So they're in an audience of their peers, and they go, boy, I might have asked an unclear question. I would like to clarify better now. And you can bet they will spoon feed you a clear explanation. You still may be challenged, but it will look like you made an attempt to get more information that could have triggered a response. But if it's used for, if people are questioning for a good purpose, you can explore deeper without looking like you don't know right away.
So, Tom, to me, what I'm gathering really and what I think is the real takeaway is that you don't want to get defensive when you're asked a tough question.
No, you don't want to get defensive. I mean, the easiest way for the body never to look defensive is to create an invitation or an offer. The palms have to be visible. When someone sees a visible palm, there's an issue of openness, approachability. The concept is also called immediacy because it feels like you're closer to the person. So you can reduce this defensive thing, posturing, by keeping the body much more open with an open gesture or reaching out, move to the audience. That's a physical move. And then tone-wise, it's much easier to simply request. Now, you could actually use tricks to silence someone or keep someone talking. It's a very simple concept. Someone says something, and if you repeat somewhat of what they said and paraphrase it, if you begin with the phrase, so what you're saying is, and then you talk, the other person has the right for rebuttal. They could say, well, actually, that's not what I'm saying, because you'd like the dialogue to continue. If you change it to, so what I'm hearing is, they can't talk anymore, mm-hmm. because this is what you're hearing. So there are ways to subtly turn down what looks like confrontation or suddenly raise it if you like the discussion, regardless of if it's slightly argumentative. That's healthy.
Mm-hmm.
But defensive, when you use that word, yeah, you don't want to look like you're – once you're standing and people are sitting, or once you're the speaker and people are listening, you're really at a disadvantage. You might win the battle, but you'll probably lose the war.
Well, great, great points. Tom, could you tell us a little bit more about where we can find out more about your work?
Yeah, the two things I would suggest is the website medianet-ny.com, and on there is a link to my visually speaking blog. What I like about the blog is there's ways for me to post up videos, analyze them, show video clips of my own demonstration of certain skills. I would encourage people to possibly investigate those directions. There's ways to link to those assessment tools, download them. Even when people, we just released a book called The Guide to Better Teaching, targeting the education world with these skills, and assessment tools are all available. So there are lots of ways people could try these things out, learn more, learn some tips if they want, and that would be my way of electronically getting people to some content.
Excellent. Well, Tom, thank you so much for taking the time to join us and share some of your insights with the listeners here at Vistage. This has been Srini Vasrao, the host of the Vistage podcast series, and until next time, good luck with your business.